My Music. A panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Shryan. Your chairman, Steve Race.
Thank you. We've moved across London to the Bloomsbury Theatre, and I have to announce that we're all present and correct. And so it is that I find myself introducing yet again John Amis and Frank Muir in friendly musical competition against Ian Wallace and Dennis Norman. While fair play is ensured by the only person here who can add up, Leonie Lawson. John, something musically magnificent, I think, announces itself like this. John, James Agate went to hear the variations on that, and he wrote, "Repeating a dull thing 32 times doesn't make it less dull." Philistine words, I think. What's the piece?
It's, you excuse the expression, Brahms number 4. It's the symphony, the fourth symphony, and it's the fourth movement, it's the Passacaglia.
I think we should say Brahms's, shouldn't we?
Brahms's?
Or where I come from, they'd say Brahms's, I think. Brahms's is fourth.
Zizzes.
Anyway, you're quite right, it is the fourth symphony by Brahms. It comes from the last movement.
One thing I remember about that is that Sir Thomas Beecham used to conduct Brahms symphonies, and Brahms wasn't his best thing, but he would conduct these symphonies, and he conducted them from memory. So there was a good deal of circular motion, because he wasn't quite sure where he was. And he stopped the orchestra one time in the rehearsal, and he said, "Trombones, why aren't you playing?" And they were reading a paper, actually. And they said, "Well, Sir Thomas, you know, this being the fourth symphony of Brahms, we don't play till the Passacaglia at the end." He said, "Oh, I don't care a damn about that." He said, "If I give you a signal to come in, play something. If you don't, you make me look such a damn fool."
Lovely stuff. Well, you've got a mark, John. We move on to Frank. Frank, it was Noel Coward, Frank, who commented on the potency of cheap music, wasn't it? While sometimes indulging a little of it himself.
Any little fish can swim, any little bird can fly, any little dog or any little cat can do a bit of this and just a bit of that. Any little horse can neigh, and any little cow can moo, but I can't do anything at all but just love you.
Well, I'm going back to James Agate, Frank, who wrote...
Thank you.
Yeah, who wrote, one summer evening, note, in 1936, he wrote, "I left the hall in a violent state of musical indigestion, the result of listening to a band on a pier without any peer." Can you guess the event, Frank, or the hall?
A peerless pier.
Yes.
Is this from... Are these quotations from Egos?
Yes, they are. Yes, from the diaries. Summer evening... Well,
Is it a theatre?
No, it's not a theatre, it's a concert hall. Quite near a broadcasting house it was then. Very near.
Was it the... Oh, yeah. was it the last night of the Proms?
Yes, it was. It was the last night of the Proms, 1936.
It, well, he
did.
Banner waving.
That's right. And the hall was called the...
The Queen's Hall.
Queen's Hall, yes. Last night of the Proms. Ian, we turn to sport. Bob Armstrong, writing from Timperley, is, like you, addicted to cricket. Among composers, he suggests that Johann Strauss and Verdi would make a particularly good association at opposite ends of the wicket. I wonder if you can figure out why, as I give you a musical hint. Opera it's from?
Yes, I do. It's from Balduin Mascara, or The Masked Ball. The Masked Ball, which would presumably be somebody concealing their intention while bowling.
It would be a Chinaman, wouldn't it?
Yes, a sort of Clary Grimmett or Dennis Compton going back a few years.
Well, meanwhile, receiving the ball would be a Johann Strauss opera.
An operetto?
Yes.
yes, of course. Yes. Die Fledermaus.
Yes. The Bat.
The Bat.
The Bat.
Five, show. Yes. I was sort of thinking of things like one of the sort of the galops, meaning that he'd been run out. Or
no, nothing as subtle as that. But Mr. Armstrong, who suggested this, also suggests Anton Karas at third man.
He would.
Dennis, still on the subject of sport, can you name either the singer or the person he's impersonating?
40, 15. Out.
What?
Out.
What?
The ball was out.
You've got to be kidding! The ball's in. Everyone can see that the ball's in. Chalk dust. Everyone can see that there was chalk dust.
Yes,
completely successful. I'm ashamed to say I can't remember the singer, but of course it was John McEnroe.
John McEnroe, yeah, the singer. He called himself the Brat on the label. Yeah. Roger Kitter was the singer, but you got the answer. John McEnroe was the person he was sending up.
Steve, in the long field would be Kachaturian.
Yes. As I think you observed in the past, Kachaturian, and put it in your pocket.
John, back to you again. This is a composer writing about one of his best-loved works. When I wished to sing of love, it turned to sorrow. And when I wanted to sing of sorrow, it was transformed for me into love. Poignant remark. Who made that remark? Do you know?
No, I don't.
Well, here's some music to give you a good hint. Help?
Well, that's Death and the Maiden Quartet by Schubert.
That was the work he was talking about, this mixture of love and sorrow. Yeah. Mm. Frank, from one of Schubert's letters, the wise and beneficent regulations of our government have taken good care that the artist shall remain the eternal slave of these miserable money grabbers. Who was he talking about, Frank?
Well, somebody, a contemporary of his.
Well, we all have these people. We all have them
Thomas Campbell.
Now, we all have them as our contemporaries, these people.
Said that...
Ah, sorry.
Who recall wrote Gertrude of Wyoming.
I didn't recall that, but I'm pleased to hear it.
Did you get a reply? Now, Barabbas was a publisher.
Ah, yes.
Because the publishing world... The publishing profession had just begun at that time and had cast a rather awful hand on writers, composers... And indeed, artists.
Yes,
he was. Publishers are middlemen, and a recent development.
He was talking about these miserable money grabbers, talking about publishers, music publishers. Ian, another composer altogether. His place in the servants' hall was reported to be above the archbishop's cooks, but below the archbishop's valets. Who was that unfortunate chap?
I think we're talking probably about an Austrian archbishop, are we not?
Yes.
Yes, that was poor old Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Mozart, he was. Yes, Salzburg. Yes,
From that position, would be probably asked to provide incidental music for some party that was taking place the next afternoon.
But he was awfully treated. He was. His place was above the cooks, but below the valets or valets, if you prefer to put it that way.
You know, in the 19th century, the biographers were so holy, they couldn't bear to say that at one point. Mozart had a row with the agent and was kicked out. It says in the book that he propelled Mozart towards the door with his boot.
Same thing, yes. Dennis, listen for a moment to Mozart celebrating marriage.
Sure.
see my listening to Mozart face there?
Yes. Beautifully composed. Yes. Still as still could be. Yeah. Dennis, Mozart once proposed marriage to Marie Antoinette. Why did she turn him down?
Well, as he was Austrian, she was French, I suppose, because she didn't understand a blind word he was talking about.
I will happily accept that and merely tell you it was during a visit to Vienna in 1763. She turned him down because he was only 7 and she was 8. But not for the first time, I prefer your answer. But
he'd done about 8 symphonies. He was a good catch, wasn't he, actually?
Oh, yes. Yes, he'd done more than she had at that age. There was once a piano tuner, somewhat inexperienced, who fiddled about for an hour or two and then said to the owner, I've tuned your piano, Gov, but there's one thing you should know. White plays black and black plays white. So I turned to the black and white notes of the piano beside me and hoped for the best in this week's piano medley. 4 tunes for each side to write down. First one.
Animal cracker in my soup.
Soup. Thank you, Fwenk. Yes, then young.
Schubert, Wasamunda.
Yes, it comes from. It's also in Lilac Time, of course. And
would you just remind me of that next tune? It was a Bach fugue.
Yes.
Two Geiger counters concerto.
Yes. Bach double concerto. D minor, yes. Then, 1, 2, 3, one more from you.
There's a whiff of wedding march.
Yes, a whiff of... Whose whiff of wedding march? Whose?
Mine.
That's very true.
In the sense that it was played as a march.
Right. Or...
Mendelssohn, as they call him in Scotland.
Yes, Mendelssohn, yes. Scotland. Turning to Scotland, then. Ian. Or Dennis.
Jubilo, I got there. The land of Jubilo.
Well, I'll buy that. The day of Jubilo.
Day of Jubilo.
Or Kingdom Coming, or it has been known as the Doodletown Fifers.
I see.
On a famous jazz record, yes. Then?
Rhapsody in Blue.
Yes, Rhapsody in Blue. And last two?
Rule Britannia.
And?
God Bless the Prince of Wales.
That's right. You've got full marks there. Good.
Birds for Petrus.
It is a tragedy. John, tell us which tragedy and who is doing what. Require a hint.
Well, it's Verdi.
Yes.
And it's got a cor blimey in it, which means it must be fairly late Verdi.
Yes.
Is it one of those Shakespearean numbers?
It is. I'll give you a hint by stretching my two arms in front of me.
Ah, yes. It's the sleepwalking scene.
Yes.
From Macbeth.
From Macbeth, that's right. She's
the
sleepwalking.
Water divine, I thought it was.
Sung by... cor blimey, John?
It's cor anglais.
Oh, I see.
Which is an English horn, but it's always known in the professional world as a cor or cor blimey.
I see.
I'm glad you asked that question.
A late-ish instrument in Verdi's works, you see.
Your witness.
The singer there, if anyone was interested, was Eleanor Soliotis. Frank, those witches, sisters, pretty weird, I always think. Let's have a taste of the apparitions scene. theatrical composer that man was. Frank, according to the chap who wrote the play on which the opera is based...
Willie?
Yes. When do the witches meet again? Where and what do they hover through? When shall we three meet again?
The three hovercraft. Three meet again...
when the...
Where?
When the...
And the witches later seen... in the heath they're going to meet, aren't they, on the heath?
Well, upon the heath, yes, that's got you a third of a mark, yes.
And they there's a lot of backchat between the three of them in this bit, isn't there?
There is, they're stir away.
Fog and filthy air.
Yes, they hover through the fog and filthy air, that's right.
Yes.
And when the hurly-burly's done...
I would have thought so.
You've done marvellously on that. When the hurly-burly's done, when the battle's lost and won, that's when they meet again.
I took extra plasticine modelling. And the rest of the class was taking it.
Yes. Ian, what Macbeths have you known? Have you known any Macbeths?
Well, I've never sung in the opera, but when I was a student before the war, I took part in a production of the play in which there was to be incidental music played on very, very old instruments, specially arranged. And this was 1938, I think it was. And in those days, the national anthem was always played at a performance, and it had been arranged that it would be played on this occasion before the performance. And these medieval instruments and the players were not really very expert. And when they played the national anthem at the beginning, nobody, including the stage director, recognized it as such and thought that it was the incidental music for the first scene and put the curtain up on the three witches. And being all those years ago, they did the only thing possible in the circumstances. They stood to attention round the cauldron.
Lovely story. Well, back to the operatic Macbeth. Ian, who is this Macbeth?
Beautiful singing, but I suspect not an Italian.
No.
Pronunciation not impeccable.
A siphonated North European, more Northern.
A hyphenated North European. Oh, well, it has to be the splendid Fischer Dieskau.
Yes, Dietrich Fischer Dieskau. That's right, a 1971 recording that was.
Do you know another Macbeth opera, Steve?
I don't think so.
Sid Macbeth?
No.
Mm. Bloch.
Bloch?
Yes, Ernst Bloch.
No, I didn't know that. Dennis, at the end of Macbeth, general rejoicing.
Salve!
Dennis, the last couplet in Shakespeare's Macbeth confronts any present-day actor playing Malcolm with a slight rhyming problem. So thanks to all at once and to each one... Can you recall the very last line
of play? Well, Frank and I can, because we once ran into a lot of trouble with this. We
sorry.
It's about being crowned at what we now call Scoon.
Scoon,
yeah.
Yes, correct.
Well,
we were once
involved with writing a radio series at a time, I don't know how many people's memory go back this far, when the Stone of Scoon was stolen. Mm. And in those days, it was looked upon as practically a sacred thing. And in this radio series, we were... toying with an idea whereby you substituted sounds like that, a thing which you do sometimes in this programme, instead of the lyrics. And there was a song popular called The Thing at that time. And we went, get out of here with you, and don't come back no more. The audience laughed because all that was in the news was Stone of Scone. So it fitted, get out of here with you, and never come back. We were hauled in front of the director of Light Entertainment at that time, having made a joke about this sacred object without a word having been spoken.
Yes, you never said it.
That's right.
Well, enough of Macbeth. Next week, East Lynne. Meanwhile, Fats Waller, Rachmaninoff, cabbages, beans, carrots, Casablanca. They're all mixed up in this final few minutes of songs. Frank, when somebody thinks you're wonderful. Introduction.
Could happen.
When somebody thinks you're wonderful, what a difference in your day. Seems as though your troubles disappear like a feather in your way. When somebody thinks you're wonderful, tells you with a smile so sweet, what a little stones you step up on, just a meadow neath your feet. And how you meet the morning and gaily swing along. All night you may be weary, but your heart still sings a song. When somebody thinks you're wonderful, love is mighty close to you. Just another thing more wonderful, making all your dreams come true.
Thank you. Do you think I'm fat enough for that?
No. Not quite.
You really need the bowler hat to sing it, don't you?
I mentioned Rachmaninoff. I don't propose to play his prelude in C-sharp minor, not even my own version in C major. I'll play just the accompaniment to John's singing in this lovely song, To the Children.
Often at midnight in days long since fled, dear children, I've watched with deep joy by your bed. How often your brows have I signed with a cross and prayed there, God keep you from sorrow and loss. The love of the Father protect you. Slumber to keep you in sight, to watch you and know that your souls were snow white, to wish for you gladness and long happy years, untainted by evil, unbroken my fears, the sweet and how dear were those vigils.
After which, yeah. Dennis. Cabbages, beans, carrots. Here we go.
Cabbages, cabeans and carrots. Carrots and cabeans and cabbages. Sweetest of flowers that I love so. I love to sit there and watch them grow. Some people like rhododendrons and some forget-me-nots. But I'd rather have a nice plate of kabeef, kabarges, kabeans and carrots.
And so to Ian's song. Humphrey Bogart distinctly ordered me never to play it again.
You must remember this, a kiss is still a kiss, a sigh is just a sign. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say, I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs, never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by.
Oh, yes, that final score. A victory, well, for nobody this week. It's a draw. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Pete Atkins.